The following episode of An Evening at the Movies is brought to you by the I Did Not Make These Rankings Podcast Network, Masturbators, The Sip List, An Evening at the Movies, Crushgasm, and Love is Black. All bring you this following episode. Thank you very much, and have a nice day. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to everybody's favorite movie-based podcast. This is An Evening at the Movies. I am your amazingly awesome host, Casey, and this is the podcast where we eat stale popcorn and drink watered-down sodas and discuss all of our favorite movies and why we love them. Joining me, as always, tonight is everybody's favorite co-host, Amanda.
Hello.
Otherwise known as Gordon Ramsay herself, as she's cooking dinner while recording tonight.
I'm making a lovely beef stew in my Instapot. I didn't start soon enough. For Instapots, I gotta tell you, they're cool for cooking like the meat and stuff quickly, but it's still like most things are still like an hour of prep and preparation, whatever time. So I don't know. It's cool.
It's always cool. But even more cool than the fact that Amanda is cooking dinner for her little family tonight, we are rejoined again by our amazing friends from the literary world. Meg Hafdahl and Kelly Florence are here with us tonight. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, thanks for having us.
And I, too, made dinner tonight. I made some in a crock pot, and then I made some on the stove. But I agree, Instapot isn't instant.
It's not, no. I still appreciate it, but it's not as easy as I was hoping it would be.
You would think with Insta being in the title that it would be implied, but...
I mean, I will say you can cook, like, stew meat or, like, you know, in less than an hour. And, you know, chicken, I mean, it's good. It's just, I think some stuff still belongs in a crock pot. And I think stew's probably one of them, but I didn't start early enough. So.
All right. So now that we are ready to go and we've got the dinner plans out of the way. So for those of you who have not joined us for the last couple of times that Meg and Kelly have been here, we would like to let the ladies give everybody a chance to get to know them and understand exactly what it is that they do and why they are an awesome part of the An Evening at the Movies family. So I'll just say this before I turn it over to them. Both Meg and Kelly are published authors who have published handful of amazing books that we love on the show, as well as they host their own horror movie podcast as well. And I will turn it over to them and let them explain everything to you as to what exactly it is that they do. So ladies, the floor is yours.
So you can't see us right now, but you can hear us. And Meg has a cat on her lap that just joined. And so it's very entertaining because I love when animals infiltrate podcasts because you yes. just never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't. She could just claw my face. And, you know, that would be very apropos for horror.
Yes.
So we are the co-authors of five, it'll be six next year, but five Science of books. And I'm a fiction author and we're screenwriters together, and my cat is here and her name is Sweet Tasty.
So Meg and I bonded over the X-Files and Stephen King 22 years ago when we were only 2 years old. Just kidding.
I was about to say, there's no way y'all bonded that early over Stephen King.
Well, I know. We're just...
You don't look old enough to have bonded in your teens or adulthood.
Well, thanks.
Thank you. We'll take it. We love getting carded, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same.
Isn't that the best? Getting carded. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. These gray patches on either side of my beard are a great indication of me being in my 40s, but
you don't get carded.
I've gone into the store before to buy a bottle or whatever and been asked to see my ID, and it's like, really?
Well,
teenagers aren't this gray. So yes, actually, a fun fact about Meg and the cat being involved in the recording tonight as well. The first time Meg was on An Evening at the Movies, last fall, I think it was. Her dog actually was involved in the recording as well.
I live in a zoo, help. This is my cry for help.
So evidently, we'll just, every time that they come on, we'll just have animals involved in some way, shape, or form.
I think it's your turn next, Kelly.
I'll do it. You know what? I do have a mouse in my house, though.
Oh, yeah.
You were fighting. So, yeah, there's a mouse literally over here somewhere, and it keeps evading me.
That is too funny.
My dog wants nothing to do with podcasting. Anytime he sees a phone or a camera or anything, he's just like, nope, no thanks.
Really?
Oh, yeah, funny. He's a weirdo. And my cat will just crawl on the keyboard, so.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, it took Jack literally, like, when I was on vacation back in September, like 4 days to warm up to me. It was literally like, we're getting ready to go out the door and take me back to the airport. And he finally started, okay, fine, I'll warm up to you now.
Of course,
because he knew you were leaving.
Exactly. I mean, there was one morning he literally got let out to go to the bathroom, came back in, came running around the corner, and jumped up in my lap and was like, he thought I was Amanda's husband, and as soon as he realized I wasn't, he was like, oh no.
He's very selective.
So before we get started with tonight's episode, I made a promise to all the listeners when we decided to do this episode that the most recent book that Meg and Kelly published, The Science of Witchcraft, which came out back in October. October. It was October, wasn't it?
September, but that's okay.
Oh, I thought it was October. That's right. It was September.
Either way.
Whatever.
It was a couple of months ago, but we purchased a extra copy of the book because we wanted to afford the listeners a chance to be involved and enter for a chance to win their own copy of The Science of Witchcraft from them as well. And we have a handful of listeners that entered for their chance to win. And awesome. With that said, before we get started really quick, I have everything entered and ready to go. And all I have to do is pull up my phone app and hit one button. And we will know who is the proud winner of the An Evening at the Movies copy of The Science of Witchcraft.
Woohoo!
And the winning entry is going to be...
Amanda Kohlhofer. Oh,
you already have a copy. You're not eligible.
That's true.
Oh. Go figure. It is Shanna Lindemann.
Yay!
So I will get a hold of Shanna, or when Shanna listens to this episode, she can get a hold of me. And I will get your shipping details and we will get your copy of The Science of Witchcraft sent off to you immediately, hopefully early enough in time that you can have a nice Christmas present to put under your Christmas tree and open on Christmas morning with the rest of them. So, yay, congratulations, Shanna.
Yay.
But more than that, we are here today because our guests happen to have a deep affinity for a classic piece of Stephen King literature, as well as, well, I mean, it's a classic piece of the Stanley Kubrick cinematic library as well. But we are going to be discussing the Stanley Kubrick classic and, well, more importantly, Stephen King classic, The Shining.
Yay!
Yes.
Does Shanna win anything Shining related?
Well, I might be able to throw something else in with that as well, because I actually have a couple of extra pieces of Shining collection.
Oh, see what I did for you there. Ooh.
So that might necessarily need to be a fun-filled surprise as to what I might throw into that package with The Science of Witchcraft. Because welcome back, Queenie. How's dinner?
I'm not getting to eat it yet, so I don't know. I took a bite. It tasted all right. Actually, tasted good.
In case you weren't back yet, I officially introduced the fact that we will be discussing your favorite Stephen King movie of all time, which did not happen to do very well in our Stephen King 75th birthday greatest Stephen King movie of all time tournament. But we won't rehash that again because you're still bitter.
That's fine.
What won?
Okay, so the final four in that tournament were basically the Rob Reiner and Frank Darabont classics. The Rob Reiner side had obviously Misery versus Stand By Me. The Frank Darabont side had The Green Mile and Shawshank. The final two were The Green Mile versus Stand By Me.
Really?
I really thought people were going to go the horror route.
Yeah.
That was the one thing we told everybody from the get-go was vote with your heart and not.
Yeah, that's not what I thought people ever were going to do.
I'm surprised. I mean, there was stuff that happened early on that I didn't think was necessarily going to happen either, like Dr. Sleep losing to Children of the Corn. But
blasphemy.
It is. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the greatest Stephen King movie of all time is Stand By Me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
your choice sucks.
I went on a face journey there.
Meg does not have a poker face. Let's just say that. I don't. Also, the four of us, we aren't biased at all, but obviously The Shining. So
yeah.
I mean, I honestly didn't think The Shining was going to go out as fast as it did.
I didn't either.
I think The Shining went out in the second round.
Oh my God. Well,
I was actually kind of hoping, because of the way that the brackets were all set up, that at some point there could have actually been a Shining versus Dr. Sleep matchup.
Yeah, it would have worked out, but
it would have worked out if Children of the Corn hadn't shocked the world and beat Dr. Sleep in the first round.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it's like, it's not what's the best. I guess it's like what their favorite is, maybe. Because that's like there's a big difference, you know, between what's the best and what's your favorite, you know.
Well, and that's what I say on the sip list. When we do our top fives, it's what's your favorite.
Yeah.
Whereas when Dre posts these, he always says what's the best. So on those, I typically vote for what I believe is the best movie. Or like right now we're doing Christmas movies and I can't remember what... I don't even remember the matchup, but one was a Christmas movie and one just happened to take place at Christmas. The second one I like better, but I was like, the other one's a better Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it does depend on how you vote or how you approach it.
So that's what we've discovered on our podcast too, is that a lot of times it might not be the best movie, but because of nostalgia reasons, we love it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, but not The Shining. The Shining is the best.
Yeah. Best and the favorite.
There is some, we'll get into some of the other stuff too as well, because this is definitely probably one of the most polarizing pieces of King literature and part of the cinematic world as well, because you've got so many people that fall in line behind his theory that, well, you guys both know as well, Kubrick's version of his book is not anywhere
near. It's not a version of the book. It's loosely based on it.
King is not a fan of Kubrick's vision. We'll just leave it at that. And I guess I can kind of sort of see where Stephen King's coming from, but at the same time, it's not like it's a garbage movie by any stretch of the imagination either.
No. You have to separate them. You just have to. Or I have to, anyway.
Yeah. We won't go back into the whole idea of Casey renaming movies that he doesn't like because they don't fit my vision.
Anyway.
We went down that road a couple weeks ago with Halloween 3. So.
Halloween 3 either.
I love Halloween 3.
You would. with that said, off the top of my head, actually, on that very subject, I actually would like to get your guys' opinions on this. And by me posing this question, I absolutely mean no disrespect at all. But as you guys being published authors, if somebody was to pick up the rights to one of your books and go way off in left field, like what many feel Kubrick did with The Shining, would that be something that as a writer would offend either of the two of you?
Well, okay. First of all, I think that Stephen King has every right to feel the way he does. So I think, you know, the fact that he feels that way is fine because he's entitled to feel how he wants.
Yeah.
I don't, but I have my reasons. So okay, I'll tell you why.
I think he's entitled to feel that way, especially because, you know, when you write a book, it's your baby. And, you know, he had a certain vision in mind, and that's okay. That being said, I think it's cool that, and there is a difference. Obviously, there are differences between the book and the movie. I don't think they're as far off as it may seem. I actually think that, you know, the core emotions are there and the core themes are there and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, obviously there's some like plot things that are different and stuff like that. And obviously he felt that Jack Nicholson kind of came off as evil from the beginning, rather than, you know, how he wanted Steven Weber to be in the,
right.
In the movie. And that's fine. That's fine. He can see it that way. But I think it's cool that Stanley Kubrick made it his own, took things from The Shining and turned it into another piece of art. Because mm-hmm. The Shining, the book, is a piece of art, and The Shining, the movie, is a piece of art. And I get why Stephen King feels the way he does, but I don't. I can appreciate both, and they can coexist together. That being said, if it was my book, I'd probably be sore about it if it wasn't the vision that I saw. You know, it might take me a while to be like, okay, this was Wes Anderson's view and he has this aesthetic. You know, directors have their way of doing things. And so it'd probably take me a while. Kelly would probably have to like pat me on the shoulder for a while and tell me it's okay.
So, and from my standpoint, I come from a director standpoint because I've directed in the past, and also from the standpoint of like sometimes we take feedback and constructive criticism and it's not always a great feeling, but we can appreciate when someone else's vision can, like Meg said, create a different piece of art. It's not going to be the same. It's not a carbon copy. And I think a lot of times that's good. I like adaptations a lot of times because someone sees something in that piece of art and makes it different. So I appreciate it.
Okay.
I think, oh, sorry.
I was just going to turn it over to you so you could give your thoughts before we get deeper into the rest of the story and the movie and the book and all that. So go ahead.
I agree. I mean, obviously Stephen King has the right to feel how he wants to feel. It is his baby, it is whatever, but excuse me. I think the mistake that he made, and I don't know the ins and outs of this enough to say it's easy to do, but I think people see dollar signs when a studio wants to take their book and run with it and make it a movie, and they don't ask for any creative control. And I think that's what happened to Stephen King. He said, oh yeah, you want to turn my book into a movie? Great. I'm going to make some money. And then he had zero control over what happened to it, and he didn't like the end result, which is fair, but I feel like he should have had the foresight to go, I need part of the creative control of this project so it doesn't go off the rails. So. Well,
part of it too is, I think The Shining was what his number two cinematic release, number three movie done overall, with Carrie obviously being number one, then Salem's Lot, and then The Shining in 1980. So it's not like it was done 5 years ago where he's got all this wealth of reputation and all that. I mean, he was still a fairly young author at the time.
True.
I was just going to say, and this could be kind of controversial.
Oh no.
But I say this with all the love in my heart for Stephen King, but I don't think his vision on screen is as good as his vision is in books. And when he does get involved, it's sometimes not great.
I agree. I was going to say The Shining miniseries. I like Maximum Overdrive better than that.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, The Shining miniseries is an example. Maximum Overdrive is an example. And just other things that he's put his hand in a little too much, because I think that that's one of those times where he needs to, like, let people who know what they're doing. But I totally agree. Like, if he's going to, like, have a huge opinion about it, he probably should have, like, been like, hey, I want to help. But
and that's then, what I'm
but
saying.
I also agree that he was young. And yeah. he isn't where he was today. And so, I don't know.
He probably didn't know.
If you wrote the book, I guess you get to have an opinion.
Yeah. I just think if you want the movie to be a certain way, you have to, you know. But also, yeah. I've heard plenty of cases where that is very difficult. You know, like, I know with the 50 Shades movies, that was not that that's a great cinematic or literary piece of whatever. But I know there was a lot of behind the scenes crap because E.L. James wanted so much control. So, I don't know. Yeah. Too many chefs, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm the one of those guys that has gone back and forth on my opinion of the movie and the book and who's right, who's wrong, and all of that. And ultimately, at the end of the day, everybody has their right to have their own opinion as to how things should be done. My biggest one, and I think it's kind of sort of in line with what Meg was just saying a second ago. Ultimately, if you look at the grand scheme of everything that's been adapted from his books to the screen, big screen, small screen, whatever, a lot of his stuff, he's only really had a very small handful of really faithful adaptations to his work. To the point I could probably count them all on one hand. And as big as his library is, that says a lot, because his library is like, what, 70 some odd books deep, and I've only got five fingers on one hand to count. So
well, and I think it's a really actually a testament to what a good writer he is, because
yeah,
how do you put something like as dense as, well, and they've tried now with like the Dark Tower series, but how do you put something as dense as that, you know, into a TV or film, or right. even like the nuances of characters and, you know, Needful Things, or all of his like big chunky books?
And that's the thing, like the cliche is that the book was better, obviously, yeah. Especially
yeah.
You can't do an adaptation of most of his works perfectly. And that's okay.
Because yeah. It's hard to put it into words, what he's writing. Yeah. Like it without really... without making the dialogue cheesy or stupid. Like
yeah. And also just all the things that go on inside characters' heads and things like that. That he's just amazing at, but it just doesn't translate, you know.
Well, and I think that's part of where Amazon got into trouble when they kind of sort of picked up the rights to The Dark Tower after
the atrocious Idris Elba movie.
Yeah, I was going to be polite and say the 2017 adaptation came out, or whatever you want to call that, but I mean, there was the plan to turn the series into an Amazon Prime series. And then I don't know all the politics behind the plug getting pulled on that, but I think there was some complications with how much it was going to cost and all of that. And with Amazon Originals being fairly young at that time, it was kind of sort of do we really want to open that can of worms and spend that kind of money on something we don't know if it's going to be that successful?
Yeah.
But I mean, The Dark Tower is such a, and we saw it when the movie came out as well, because you have a big portion of his fans that are hardcore Dark Tower fans. And if you don't give them exactly what they're going to want, they're going to roast you over a fire on a spit, because what you gave them was hot garbage.
Well, the internet has made fandoms toxic anyway. It doesn't matter what it is. There are toxic fandoms in everything.
Well, and I was going to say too, like, it could be really good too, but sometimes you can't make people happy who, well, like, I'm just thinking of like when the female Ghostbusters movie came out.
Yeah.
And it was a cute movie. It was a good movie. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad. It was a fun movie. But
I laughed. Just,
yeah. So, but people were like, they wanted to feel like they did when they saw the first Ghostbusters, which is like
you can't
close to impossible. Or
yeah, you can't recreate that.
So I don't know. It's just it's interesting because, you know, again with adaptation, with a book adaptation, it's like almost impossible. Like how can
especially
you
with King.
Well, yeah, so.
But I think he... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, but I think Stanley Kubrick made such an iconic, perfect movie. And even though, you know, we could argue that that Stephen King doesn't like it and maybe it's not the most faithful adaptation, what a freaking great movie it is.
It's iconic and so many pop culture references and probably, you know, put Jack Nicholson on the map, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and even, and I might be going kind of cheesy with this as well, but that opening sequence when the movie starts, when the credits are rolling, wow. I mean, you get that whole, like, the camera's flying in over Jack.
That score.
To the restaurant. To the hotel. And I mean, you get some very amazingly beautiful scenic views of that drive up to the overlook.
I mean, the music.
We just had the opportunity to rewatch this recently, and it was cool because we saw it on an outdoor screen in LA. Ooh. And that opening sequence, we both just looked at each other and were like, this is amazing. And it's again, beautiful. That score, you know, it's not a drone shot. They didn't have drones back then. And it's just old school classic filmmaking, and it's gorgeous.
Just what I love.
And I don't remember ever seeing anything for an opening like that ever before. And I could be,
I mean, Star Wars, but not, I mean, it's not the same, but like both of those I think are iconic. It's
similar, but not the same. But other than that, I really don't think there's anything else on the table that could remotely be compared to that as well. I mean, and that was definitely Kubrick's vision for, you know, the opening.
I appreciate most of his work, so.
Yeah, not all of it. Me too, but I was going to say, it just fills you with dread. I love the opening because mm-hmm. it just makes you feel anxious.
Yes. Which,
I mean, is what horror fans are looking for. That's what you want. You want that feeling like, oh, something like the S is going to hit the fan, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it feels. Even though it's out in the daylight and it's this beautiful vista, but this music is just mm-hmm. like, you don't even know what's coming, you know?
But you know it's bad.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, because we're all kind of sort of in that ballpark age range where, yeah, we were fairly young probably the first time that we saw this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But even knowing that it's attached to the whole Stephen King as the writer. But, yeah, I mean, you kind of, and then couple that with that intro music from the credits, and you know something's going down at that point, mm-hmm. and it ain't going to be good.
And you know Carrie had to be hard to follow up. Like, who's going to follow that? So, you know that, right? But I will say, and we need to get onto the plot, so then we can discuss, because I know Kelly's got to bounce soon. I told this story on Facebook, and I wish if I could ever meet Stephen King, I would tell him this. I was at Books a Million, I think, and I was in the King section, and, you know, I'm looking at, they had a copy of The Shining that I wanted that I don't have because I have like 12 copies of The Shining. Don't judge me. They're all different. And so I'm looking at it, and this kid comes up to me, and he cannot be more than 18. And if I were to guess, he was probably 16 or 17. And he's like, I can't remember what movie he saw. I think he saw Dr. Sleep. And he was like, man, I saw this movie. I really want to get into reading his books. And he's like, I don't know where to start. What should I read? And I was like, oh man, I can actually educate someone. Like, I can pass on the wisdom. And it's just, it's great to me to see that all these generations later, you know, kids, my kid age is wanting to read Stephen King and get into it. And so I was like, we had a really nice conversation and I talked to him about all the different, you know, stuff we saw there. I did tell him to start with The Shining.
I was going to ask.
Yes. I gave him a few warnings about certain parts that are slow, but the overall, I thought it was his best work. But it, because I asked him, what do you like? What are you into? You know? So I think that's a true testament to, no matter how he feels about any movie, his work is going to live on forever.
Oh yeah.
So. Something that you mentioned when we, how we all watched or read The Shining when we were younger. Mm. I saw Stephen King before I ever read him. I saw him in like first grade, which is arguably too young, but
oh, me too.
I related to Danny because he's a kid, and you know, when you're a kid and these kid characters, just like Children of the Corn, you are relating to the kid characters, and then all of a sudden you start seeing through things through that lens. And Meg and I have talked about this. As we got older, of course, we start to see things through that viewpoint of Shelley Duvall's character, right. Wendy, and the mother, and it just shifts. And so it's iconic because regardless of your age, you can relate in a different way. And it's terrifying at all ages.
Yes. That's absolutely true too, because there's a lot of things I watch as a kid that as a mom, I'm like, you know, like, okay, like, what's her name? Jasmine's dad, not Jasmine. Who am I thinking of? Never mind. There's somebody that like ran off to get married and I was like, her dad's not wrong. She didn't even know the guy.
Yeah. But when you're a kid, you're like, oh, it's so romantic. speaking of Duvall, I just wanted to say that I wrote an essay a while back because I felt very strongly about how people are mean about Shelley Duvall in The Shining. And I think that she is one of the most overlooked final girls. And I think that she's super strong, super like a role model, someone to look up to. I think she handles the situation realistically and saves her son and gets her stupid husband in the pantry and locks him in there. And I just think that because she cries and because she reacts how a real human would react,
right,
people fault her for that when, you know, they want her to be Ripley and she's not. And I, that's what I like about her, is that she's real. And so yeah. I think not only is her performance wonderful as Shelley Duvall, but I think the character Wendy, I like how she is portrayed in the movie.
Okay, I think the mistake they made was casting a brunette who is the average looking woman. Like, I think she's really beautiful, but she's not what Wendy is portrayed as in the book. And then two, we all know about all the like just emotional damage she suffered from Kubrick during the filming of this. So I think Shelley Duvall is great. And having watched the movie before I read the book, I didn't have any problems with her. And even when I read the book, I really didn't. It was just, she's not as advertised physically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because I was going to actually, that was one of the questions I had for obviously all three of you ladies, because I think it was 81. The Shining actually was nominated for 2 Razzies, being everybody knows what the Razzie Awards are. It got nominated for Worst Director, being Stanley Kubrick, and then got nominated for Worst Female Performance. And I wanted to ask you guys what your thoughts were, because I think part of what everybody's issues are with Shelley Duvall was the obvious, I don't necessarily want to say horrific trauma that Kubrick put her through to get what he needed for that movie. But I mean, it's been well documented to the point that even like the committee that nominates things for the Razzies has retracted her nomination from that year. And
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's pretty recent.
Yeah, I think it was done this year, actually, because when I was doing my notes for today's episode, it popped up and I was like, oh, okay. I knew she had been nominated as worst actress in a movie for that year, but I didn't know that it had been retracted. So, but yeah, I wanted to get your guys' opinions on what you thought of Shelley Duvall's performance as well. And obviously Meg and Amanda have chimed in with their thoughts as well.
Yeah. I mean, I echo all that. So,
Kelly, do you have anything that you wanted to throw in on that before we moved on?
Yeah. We wrote a chapter on, kick-ass women in our book, The Science of Women in Horror, and Meg's essay is included. And then we include some other research that, yeah, we love Buffy the Vampire Slayer and she kicks butt, but we also love Wendy Torrance and she kicks butt in her own way. As Meg said, she is a final girl. She survives this abusive alcoholic husband who is communing with ghosts and she saves her son. Like, what's more badass than that?
Right.
In the middle of 8 feet of snow, in the middle of nowhere in the Rocky Mountains, you know,
she's a mom. That's what it is. Like, she's a real person and she's a mom, and you don't have to be Ripley or Buffy or whatever. Protecting your child is the most like carnal human instinct that we have. And you don't, however you do it, as long as you're successful, like you win, like that's how you do it.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry, Meg, what were you gonna say?
No, nothing. I just think it was a good performance. Aside from what she went through, aside from the character, I think it's an amazing performance. That's just, you know.
I think so too. And it's interesting because in the book, even though she's described as this blonde, beautiful, leggy, whatever, she's also described by Jack as, you know, a wet blanket and, you know, a dish rag and just like all naggy and this and that and whatever. So I think she pulled all that off brilliantly without being overly, I don't know. I don't really know what people's problem with her is, actually, because I thought it was great.
I don't think she's a horrible actress at all. I mean, first thing I ever saw her in was freaking Popeye.
Yeah.
I love Popeye, so But I also think that visually she's probably the most easily cast person to play Olive Oil that, I mean, yeah. From cartoon to real life.
Looks just like her.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're freaking twins. So, not Grady twins, but twins.
Which aren't actually twins. Oh, God. Anyway, I'll just throw this out there real quick. And then, Casey, I assume you have other questions or you want to let them give reviews. This movie doesn't need a plot description. I actually wrote one out, but it's basically a family goes to a haunted hotel and madness ensues. So, and the kid can shine or is psychic slash, I guess, is it psychic? Is that the word we would use for him or not flamboyant?
Clairvoyant.
Flamboyant. I like
all of the above.
Yeah.
And worms open.
Is it? I think it's clairvoyant is maybe what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not. I mean, we've written many books on the topics, Kelly, but I sometimes I get confused about like psychic and what's Carrie?
Telekinetic.
Telekinetic.
She has telekinesis.
Telekinesis. Danny doesn't have that.
No. I guess we'll just call it the shine.
I mean, it's at least partly psychic. He can see the future, whether, you know, it's obviously Tony telling him, but that I think that's because he's a small child. Right. He doesn't know, you know, what he's dealing with. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Sixth Sense took a lot from the Danny Torrance character, how they did that kid's character. Like, just for me, I always correlate those two together. Like, I feel like they're very similar.
Interesting. I never thought of that, but that's kind of cool.
I hadn't either. And just another episode where Amanda enlightens me onto something I had never thought of before. So thank you for that, co-host.
You're welcome.
So, I mean, as late as we're getting, why don't we just cut to the chase and let everybody give their 2 cents as to a review and rate the movie out of 5. And we'll go from there. I mean, obviously the movie's great. So we'll give Kelly a chance to give her review and then we'll move on to Meg and then Amanda and then I'll close it out. So Kelly, the floor is yours.
Go as long as you want. Talk about what you love.
Thank you. So 5 out of 5, as you know, Meg and I have the Grady girls. We don't call them the twins because they're not twins, as Amanda said. We have those matching tattoos. And because this movie is iconic, there are so many iconic scenes, moments that we feel, Meg and I, sorry to speak for you, Meg, but it's like in our DNA because this has been ingrained on our brains and in our eyeballs and our blood. And I could watch it. I do watch it at least once a year and I will never tire of it. 5 out of 5.
I watch it way more than once a year.
I obviously I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. I fell in love with Jack Nicholson when my brother was having a Batman party for his 10th birthday party in 1989. And I saw the Joker on the screen and I just about died. I just loved him so much. And so when I came across The Shining, when I was a little bit older than that, I can't even describe. It was like this movie was made for me. And this is before I even read anything by Stephen King. And I was known as the girl in middle school that anytime anybody would come over to my house, I would make them watch The Shining. And it was like my friend meter.
That's epic.
Yeah, I mean, like, are you gonna, like, are you cool to hang or not? And so to this day, I still have people talk about that. They're like, oh my God, I remember when you made me watch The Shining. And so I'm glad to know I spread love for, or maybe not so much love for it, but it's such an important movie to me. And it touches on so many like psychological aspects of horror that I hadn't really explored before I watched it. And I'm hopelessly devoted to it. But if I met Stephen King, I don't know, maybe I would just lie through my teeth and say I hated it if he asked me. Yeah.
No, you should try to convince him.
Oh, okay, I'll do that.
You can do it.
Okay, I'll try.
Queenie?
Obviously, 5 out of 5. I'm going to use my judging mechanism as 5 out of 5 bloody elevators. That scene is, again, so many pop culture moments, you know, the here's Johnny and the blood from the elevator and come play with us, Danny. And just, you know, it's obviously, I read the book in college, and I'm not going to lie, I was pissed. When I read the book for the first time, I was like, what in the hell is that movie I've been watching my entire life? But then as I got older, I was like, okay, I'll just treat them separately. I do agree that I think Jack Nicholson is great, but he definitely does come off as a dick from the get-go. And you don't really want to like him. Whereas in the book, you know, I think Jack is a textbook narcissist. And he has these moments in the book where you think he's kind of caring, but for the most part, nothing's ever his fault. That's the only thing I think the movie is missing, is there are not really any moments where you see Jack crack once the Overlook has its hold on him. But yeah, I think again, it's kind of similar to Misery, to film a movie basically entirely in one place, albeit a big place, with mostly 3 people, and make it entertaining and, you know, beautiful and captivating is, you know, a huge feat. So I love it, and I'll never stop watching it. And when I read the book, I won't think about the movie. But other than that, it's good for me.
Okay, so my turn, and I don't remember if this came up back in January when we were discussing Psycho, but for those listeners who have been here for a while, they know about this, but I'm going to reveal it to our guests as well. But my amazing co-host gifted me a nice, beautiful present last year at this time of the year, and
oh. Press the button.
Well, I'm planning on pushing the button.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so cute. Oh. I just want to cuddle them. Oh.
Where'd you find that, Amanda?
Walgreens.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All places.
I know. I have so one too.
Cute. Oh, cute.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Walgreens is not my go-to place when I'm
I just happened to see it on the bottom shelf. And I was like, oh,
my God. Well, now I kind of want to go and see if they have any this year. I'll have to go check it out.
You should. It's really cute. It plays the music and it says all the stuff. And yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I opened my package. I got a care package last year that had a bunch of stuff in it. But when I pulled that out, I was like almost like, that was totally not what I was expecting.
Good job.
So,
yay!
My co-host knows me very well, and we will see Sunday morning when we record her birthday episode. How happy much? Birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. It's Monday, so yay!
Close enough. So.
No, I know. I'm just, you know.
Just remember how much of a great co-host I am when you open your present on Sunday when we record.
I know, I'm excited. They're sitting on the table. Keep looking at them.
So, all right. So my thoughts, again, I will go 5 out of 5 as well. And
5 out of 5 what?
I'm getting there.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Because we also revealed that, you know, Meg and Kelly have the Grady girl tattoos, as well as, you guys aren't going to be able to see it, but I'll close up as much as I can.
Oh, I see Red Rum.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, and does that say all things serve the beam? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay, so we'll piece by piece go through it really quick. But The Stand, The Dark Tower. All Things Serve the Beam.
Yes, they do.
Obviously, the...
Oh, I saw... Oh!
Balloon. It.
Balloon. The car.
The... Yeah. Symbol car. The pocket watch that is set at 4 past midnight.
Oh!
Mr. Mercedes emoji.
Oh, my God!
His whole body is a Stephen King tribute.
Well,
and I'm not, the green I'm, and a green mouse.
I have a green colored mouse for the Green Mile because I couldn't come up with anything else that wouldn't literally.
Well, take that's a place. Good idea.
And then I also have a
oh
with a God. Rose that says "Go then, there are other worlds than these."
Oh. Oh, I love
that's
it.
A good one.
I want that.
Which, ironically, I was actually saving because the idea, the last idea I had for my biggest blank spot I have left on my inside arm was to put
the only spot.
Shush! Was I wanted to put a tombstone. I don't want to put this juju out into the universe, but...
Don't say it! Don't do it!
I'm sure we all kind of know where okay, I'm so going with this.
Don't speak it into the world.
I don't want to speak it into the world, yes, like Amanda said, because we all know he's 75 years old and the years in front of us are probably fewer than they are behind it. But I wanted to go with filling in said tombstone and then use the go then, there are other worlds than these
oh.
as a decoration kind of sort of either around
yeah.
the tombstone.
That would be beautiful.
Oh, okay, but Casey, where's your Stand By Me tattoo?
That's one of my next ones that I'm working on.
Right?
Sorry, I'm laughing again. Also, here's a spoiler alert. Our next book is dedicated. We won't say to who, but we do say we will see you again at the clearing at the end of the path.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. We did. We
I have to ask this question, and I know you guys can't say a whole lot because of legal obligation and legal contractual obligations and all of that. But on your guys' Black Friday recording that I watched, you mentioned a seventh book that you can't legally talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we all
we're nodding hoping,
our, are we nodding our heads yes or are nodding our shaking our heads no?
Well, there's a book and it's coming out. And then we wrote it, or we're in the process of writing it. And
you wrote it.
Hopefully, before Christmas, we'll be able to share that news.
Yeah, which is
before so- this Christmas.
Yeah,
yeah, we're gonna Ooh. Be able to announce it within a couple weeks. We think
yeah.
so.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm excited because you guys mentioned the seventh book in that recording, and it literally like the only thing you said was seventh book, not Science of Horror. And I'm like, yeah. I own everything. And it's like, okay, I can't pre-order Science of Agatha Christie yet. give me something, ladies.
Well, we're working on it.
Let's just say Ghoul's Rule, that's a hint.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
that's
it
a,
is
hint.
A, okay.
It's a hint. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it must be horror related, right?
I mean. I'll be hitting up your DMs, but we won't say anything else for now. We will definitely announce it.
We don't want to get you guys in any kind of yeah. trouble. Not
okay. All right. In, well,
I'm not sure.
But that we will anybody... definitely share with our listeners once you guys make the
Thank
announcement.
Thank you. We appreciate that. You yeah. guys are so nice on this podcast, and we really appreciate all your support. It means a lot to us.
Oh yeah. No, we appreciate you guys. Like, this is Meg's third appearance on the show, Kelly's second. We appreciate you guys coming on, and
we know you're busy.
We know you guys are busy, so that's kind of sort of why we didn't want to push everything, because I know we were trying to do this back when Witchcraft came out, and
yeah,
with everything coming out,
crazy.
And you guys being
it's
on
a hard book, time
book tours and signing tours and all of that, it's like, well, okay, we'll gladly respect the bubble, and you know, we'll get to this at some point, and I'm glad we could actually get the chance to sit down and do this. So
yes, for sure. Thank you so much for having us.
anytime. And as always, you guys are always welcome to come back anytime. And, you know, if you happen to have a book named The Science of Agatha Christie coming out sometime in 2023 and would like to come back and talk about that as well, hey, our door is wide open as well. So you guys are always welcome to come back anytime you want.
Great. Awesome.
If you guys want to tell people real quick about your podcast and where to find it, and then.
Yep. So we are Horror Rewind, and you can find us on horrorrewind.com, anywhere you get your podcasts. And then we're on social media under Horror Rewind, and also our names, Kelly Florence and Meg Hofdahl.
Yay.
All right. So with that said, I know we're getting short on time and Kelly has to go deliver her husband to curling practice.
Yes, it's a Duluth thing. The Olympic team is here. He's not part of it, but he's going to curl tonight. So, oh, he's going to come on camera quick. He's going to wave. I know you can't see this.
Does he have a uniform on?
Oh, there he is.
Happy curling.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sometime I'm going to have to hear more about curling from probably you guys, because I...
Greatest game in the world.
Okay, if you say so. I'm waiting to be convinced.
Thank you.
All right, not a problem. I will let you guys get out of here. Thank you guys for coming back. And
thank you so much.
We look forward to hopefully many more chances to sit down and discuss all of our love for movies. Horror or otherwise, we are always here.
But horror is the best.
Of course, horror is the best. That's why we did an extended 2 month long Halloween Horror Fest this year.
True.
Love it.
So, all right. So I will let you guys out of here with that. Meg, Kelly, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Before you guys get out of here, just want to wish you guys happy holidays as well.
Yes.
You too.
Thank you very much.
I hope you get good gifts, Amanda.
I'm excited.
Casey has like a high bar. You've set a high bar for him, so
we know each other pretty well.
If I do not get an OMG thank you for my gift, then we will be evaluating her co-host status.
We'll find out.
With that said, again, thank you guys for being here, and for everybody else, thank you to the dozens for being here each and every week. We love you, and we hope everybody else comes back for an evening at the movies. Have a good night, guys.
Bye. Thank you.